In the early 1980s, I'm embarrassed to admit I was alive. I was not only alive, I was a grown adult. I was not only an alive grown adult, I was already married in the early 1980s. And the Nazarene Church had this idea to send us out to do marriage mentoring in churches and to train a mentor couple in every Nazarene church in the world. That was the big idea. There were like 8,000 Nazarene churches. And 34 years later, we have not been to all of them. But we have been to all 50 states, 9 provinces, and 2 territories of Canada. Please don't ask me the difference. Canada has states, but they don't call them states. They call some of their states provinces and some of their states territories, but they're still states, but some are provinces and some are territories. Don't ask. And 42 countries. All that means is we have watched people do marriage ministry all over the world. We've seen some cool things that work. If we know anything, it's because we were in the right place at the right time and saw something that worked, like a model that the oldies may be sharing with us later in this exact seminar. We've just seen God do some cool stuff. You have too, so we'll talk about that. Talk about what's working. For 15 years, 4 times a year, we teach a preparing for marriage class for a giant church in California of about 10,000 people. They are always preparing people for marriage, and we get to have a little part in that, which is fun. It puts us around dating and engaged couples. I have performed 414 weddings, and I don't do a wedding unless I get to do the counseling. I don't do the counseling, I don't do the wedding. So I have sat with 414 couples and learned with them and wept with them and prayed with them. To me, that sounds like a lot because it's taken my whole life to do it. In Vegas, that's like, you know, Friday afternoon. 414 weddings. I did finally do my first wedding in Las Vegas, which was an honor for me. I'd never, on 11-11-11, did a wedding in Vegas. For $100, they could have had Elvis sing at the wedding, and they didn't spend the money. So, didn't get to hear Elvis, but did get to do my first Las Vegas wedding. So I'm always around couples planning to marry, preparing to marry. I teach at 3 schools, never mind. Our culture's in transition on this whole marriage and family thing. I don't have to tell you that, you know that already. I'm not telling you something you don't know. There have been shifts in our spiritual beliefs and our values, changes in our lifestyles and our choices, our family dynamics and structure. I taught a course 20 years ago in family dynamics and structure. I'm still teaching it, but the course is so different. Not just the textbook, the course is so different today. Here's a look at some of the changes. You know these better than I do. Try it before you buy it. Living together has become normative in the culture. Now, spoiler alert, I live in California. Am I in a little bubble of liberalism that doesn't look like your part of the world? Is it just California where we just kind of live together and try it? Is that just a California thing, or does that happen where you are? Where do you see it? What do you see? Is this not the case where you live? So it's not just us crazy Californians, it's everywhere. We work with couples preparing to remarry because they've had a previous marriage, and they are universally living together as they contemplate this new marriage possibility. It's amazing. In Europe, even in the 1980s, and I'll try not to name the country because I love people there and I love the country, but in Europe in the 1980s, Christian Nazarene families, if their daughter had a serious boyfriend, just invited the boyfriend to move in, live in the house, live in the daughter's bedroom, on the theory that at least they would know where the kids were. They would know what the kids were doing. The kids would have financial support rather than be out there struggling, starving on the street somewhere. You know, it's the 1980s. I'm in my 20s. I'm young. I'm listening to this. I don't know what to do with it. I'm just trying to wrap this around. Would I do this with my daughter? Comments, input, try it before you buy it. Move the boyfriend in upstairs. Seems to be what we're doing. Yes, sir.
I was in one community where the ministers grouped together and made a stipulation that they would not marry anyone that had lived together or had not taken counseling. And so we had a united stand on it.
Wow. So like the ministerium or whatever, just banded together.
They did that in Muncie, Indiana. The ministerial association came together and did that.
Wow. Wow. Okay. At least it's not just crazy Californians, right? It's like this is an epidemic. It's a national One of our daughters went out with girlfriends before her wedding who basically told her, enjoy that first year, year and a half. It may not last any longer than that. So have fun, because the ride's going to be over. Just, and those were church-going girlfriends. Those weren't even the crazy ones. Those were the church-going girlfriends. It's like, again, same expectation. It probably won't last. Keep a separate bank account or have fun in that first year or what? Because it's disposable. It's temporary. Is that your biblical understanding of marriage? Disposable, temporary, reset. Culture has just gone places we didn't see it going. It's just gone. And number three, subjectivity. Who are you to judge my lifestyle? What business do you have telling me who I can marry, who I can't marry, what I can do, what I can't do? How is that your business? You should be a loving, accepting person, and you, loving, accepting person, should just let me do whatever it is I want to do. We're with a guy at home in Del Mar, California, not too long ago, who explains to us, here's theology for you. Bob, we'll call him. Bob is sitting there having coffee with us in Del Mar, California. I deserve to be happy. Bob is married. He's been married about 12 years. He's not happy. His wife is not making him happy. But here's theology. I deserve to be happy. He gives us about an hour download on how he deserves to be happy and the wife isn't making him happy. So what's the obvious solution? Help me here. Yeah, leave the wife. Find a wife who can make him happy. Why? He deserves to be happy. Well, he couldn't possibly be wrong about that, could he? He picked the wrong counselors that day. I don't know what you would have told him, but he was breaking bread with the wrong folks. We are gracious, but we tend to be biased in favor of the marriage that exists right now. If it's the fourth one, let's defend this one. If it's the eighth, let's defend this one. If it's the first, hang in there. I know it's late in the day. Comments, questions so far? He sought at least three other sources of counsel, and we all told him the same thing. So he has not left her yet. So we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. We're hanging together. This is not your parents' marriage ministry. I'm not saying it was easy for any generation. I'm not saying that. I am saying culturally, our values have shifted very, very radically, and the church is not informing the culture. It's dealing with the results of the culture. It's not shaping or producing the culture. Yes, ma'am.
I can't help but wonder why this way is because the church has stopped talking about marriage.
Yes.
When my boys were in elementary, junior, and high, senior high, the church we were attending, I can recall one series on marriage in all that time.
Wow.
And so you're raising a generation of young people who don't hear biblical perspective on marriage.
Yes.
So they're left to what the culture's dishing out.
Yes, yes.
And it is very frustrating, but I know the rationale why they were not having sermons on marriage because,
right.
Oh, we might have a few single folks in our audience or a few divorced people. Okay, yes, but we also have 50 to 100 teenagers who need to know the way.
Yes.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
So I think we are partly responsible for letting the culture take the narrative back.
I agree. I agree entirely. We aren't modeling, we aren't explaining the model. We're afraid to model and we're afraid to explain the model because it seems insensitive or whatever it seems. I don't know. Yeah, I agree. Comments, questions? Yes, sir.
I mean, I come from a different angle. Every one of your transitions, I've been married before, I'm remarried now. I've been married now and been with my wife for 8 years. She's a pastor's daughter. We have three beautiful kids. And all these things, when I look at, I look at my first marriage, like you said, you have one you have now, but when I look, it was the try before you buy it, it doesn't work, I'm gone anyway.
Right.
Who cares?
Right.
I can go find another one.
Right.
But then I think about it, and I purposely came to this because I see the struggle within the small community that I live in. I got young men and women that are living together. They're living together. She already has a baby. He gets her pregnant. He's working three jobs. Doesn't go. And they're so confused and don't understand why their life is so messed up. And then when you say, hey, you need to figure out it's God that you're missing, and they're like, that doesn't make any sense. You're like, well, yes, it does. And this is why. And it's a crazy dynamic that we put in. You know, for me it's kind of easy because I can explain to them, I know what you went through.
Yes.
And I
yes.
can explain to you why now it's a little easier.
Yeah. So. Yeah. We have actually spent much of our time with remarried couples, second, third, eighth, whatever. That's where a lot of our life has been spent. I love that venue. I wish it didn't exist, but I love serving it. Do you see the tension there? I wish there wasn't such a thing, but I love serving it. Listen to this because I'm going to tell you the truth. Some of the healthiest, strongest, best marriages I know of are remarriages. They're not first marriages. They're remarriages. Because, in my estimation, they learn some things out of that brokenness, out of that experience that they didn't know before. Now, I know how that sounds. Does it sound like I'm recommending brokenness as a pathway? No, I'm not. I am saying sometimes we grow up and grow through these things that we experience, and that second or third marriage is the healthy place, is the wise place, is the mature place. We got invited to a 50th anniversary party of a remarried couple. Do you think we went? We live in California. It was in rural Wisconsin. That's nowhere near me. I wasn't flying out there to speak. Nobody was going to give me an honorarium. No married person was going to buy a book. There was nothing in it for us except getting to say we went to a 50th anniversary of a remarried couple. All the stuff about remarriage says you're going to be gone in the first 5 years. It's not going to last. It's going to be over. Don't buy it. I just don't buy it. Some of the healthiest marriages I know are remarriages. I'm not recommending it. Stay with the first marriage. I just happen to know some really, really good, solid, and I suspect you may be in one, sir.
Yeah.
Suspect you may be in one.
I was married at 19 the first time, divorced by 21.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was 18.
Yeah.
That dynamic of, you know, you marry your high school sweetheart and it works out. We didn't, I don't want to say we didn't have the ideal families to understand what marriage is all about, but I think what we saw was it was more, it wasn't out of love, it wasn't for God, it wasn't in that dynamic the second time once.
Yes.
There was a reason.
Yeah.
It was a fit. You know, yeah. We worked it out. Yeah, like you said, I married the perfect person.
Do you understand how I can rejoice with him and not want people to split out of their first marriage? Can you hold those two truths together? Can you just wrap them up together? Because I can absolutely celebrate that while also wanting you to stay together in your original marriage. Both of those things are true. We have a book out called Happily Remarried, so everybody assumes we are. And we are happily, we're just not remarried. It's an original marriage, 37 years so far. Her parents have been married 63 years and mine 61. Right now they're all busy going to heaven, but long-term marriages in our background, ours is a long-term marriage. We just have spent most of our counseling work, most of our ministry work with divorce and remarriage and that side of things. Here's what churches are doing in marriage ministry right now that seems to be working. Three different things: big events, small groups, and the M word, marriage mentors. As we travel literally the world and look at what churches are doing that works. The things that churches are doing that don't work, I don't need to bring up, do I? Would you like a class of what isn't working out there? It's like, sorry, we're looking at what is. What's working right now for churches, these are churches of all sizes, from 12,000, which is about the largest we work with on a regular basis, down to about 28 or 30 people. This is what's working. Big events, small groups, and marriage mentors. Big events, let's just talk about that. You can probably just figure out that meaning by itself, but big events, if you've got a bigger budget, where are we? I'm in Illinois, yes? 2 months ago, Indianapolis First Church of the Nazarene brought us in for a big marriage event, but they didn't just bring us in. They brought in a Christian comic from Nashville, Tennessee. They brought in the Olivetians from this college to do music. They brought us in all the way from California. They brought all this in for a weekend of marriage enrichment. I didn't ask them what they spent. I did find out that the comedian cost more than us, but he was funnier than us too, so I think that seems fair. Before we even said a word, we'd laughed for 45 minutes. It's like, that seems fair. He made considerably more than we did. It's okay. They had a healthy budget for that. However, they charged the couples that attended, and I think they charged them $20 or $30 per couple. In your town, maybe there'd be a riot because nobody has $20. I don't know. In Indianapolis, they could get $20 or $30 out of a couple's pocket because they were giving back so much. They gave them food. They gave them a Christian comedian. They gave them the Olivetians, who are awesome, just awesome. And they gave them Lisa Frisbee, who's awesome, and her husband, who gets by. It was a whole combined weekend thing that just energized marriages and ministry in that church. And it ended up being self-supporting because they charged enough to pay back what they'd put out. I don't know whether your board is ready to spend $6,000 or $8,000. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't work for every church. They spent it, but they got it back in admission fees, only charging $20 or $30 per couple. That's when we talk about big events. That's the kind of thing we're talking about. What big events have you seen marriage-wise that a church has pulled off that has worked? Before Indy, we did one in Chandler, which is Phoenix, Arizona, at Crossroads Nazarene. They did about the same thing except for the Nashville comic. They brought in music. They brought in marriage. They had one of their pastors preach, so there was some preaching in it and some marriage teaching and some music and some small group stuff and fun event, fun event. And they gave theirs away. They didn't charge a thing, and people turned out anyway. Yes?
Our district sponsors a couple's retreat in which they bring them together and then discuss good, healthy relationships in America. So rather than calling someone outside,
right,
they put it in together.
Good, good. What a great thing. If you're a small church and you've got no budget at all, you could pool together with other churches. You could do you have zones in this part of the world? Do the Nazarene churches have zones? Yeah. So you could do a zone event. You could do a district event like he's suggesting. It doesn't have to all depend on your church. There's benefit in getting some momentum from a big event. It's working. For Indy First, it's working. For Chandler, it's working. Would a big event work in your church, honestly? Seriously? Late in the day, you're thinking about it. You want the number of the comic from Nashville? He doesn't work cheap, but he is funny. He works clean, and he's funny. It was good.
Who was it?
Oh, and I should know his name. I can look it up. I can look it up. He was funny, and I can look it up, because it was like 2 months ago. It was recent. I think his first name might have been Dave, I think. Does that sound right? We both think his first name might have been Dave. We can find out. Big budget, small budget, self-financed. That whole thing at Indy ended up being self-financed because it paid for itself, in other words. Big events that are getaway rather than local, you can go on a retreat, you can go to a concert together, you can go camping together. I know several churches that for their marriage ministry, everybody's gone camping together, tent, RV, whatever, just gone camping for a weekend. How crazy is that? But it brings couples together. It gets it going. They tend to do it with a script rather than unscripted. That is, they have something they're going to work on. They have some presentations they're going to do. They have some curriculum they bring along. So it's not unscripted, but they're out there swatting bugs and jumping in the lake and camping for a weekend, and it brings people together. Here's the thing about men. I don't know if you know any men. Anybody know any men? First of all, we don't have feelings. Secondly, if we did, we wouldn't talk about them. So, if you're going to try to break through with men, getting men outdoors or doing something physical or something energetic is just not a bad idea. Men that are hiking together or playing sports together or doing something together are more likely to have the kind of conversations where the truth kind of comes out than if you sit down and put a microphone in front of a man and say, "No, tell me what's going on with." We're not naturally communicators, but if you get us outdoors doing stuff, especially with other men, and we're relaxed and we're, you know, we'll talk. Yes?
I agree. My wife convinced me, consoled me to go to a marriage encounter back when I first got married. And we spent a weekend sitting there writing letters to each other and discussing it. It was the most boring.
Oh!
I've never been to one since.
Yeah, see? I'm sorry, but this is a real man. I just have to shake it. I just have to shake his hand. Mark, dude, you're a real man. We don't have feelings. If we did have feelings, they're none of your business. We just, you know, sitting around holding hands and singing Kumbaya is just not our deal. But get us out playing sports or hiking or doing some kind of guy stuff, and we're likely to spontaneously start telling each other the truth and talking about how it's really going. In a way, we never would sitting around a circle, although that does sound so sweet. You think? So go camping with your married couples. You only got three couples? Go camping. Small groups. There is so much power in small groups. We're going to talk about mentoring in a minute. There's power there too, but there's just so much awesome power in small groups. They don't cost money, for one thing. This is not a big event. This is not a budget. You don't have to call Nashville. You're there. Small groups. Affinity-based just means you have something in common. Like, for example, a small group for parents with young children. A, they can never get together because they're too busy. But seriously, if you can get parents of young children together so they can network together, the problems they face are so similar and so common. There is so much bonding, so much connection that can happen. My stars. Those first 5 years of marriage are challenging anyway. If there's young kids, if those young kids have the colic or the flu, or if they're normal, there's just stress going on there. Affinity group is a group of similar situations. We have an affinity. We have something in common. We have young kids. We have toddlers. We just got married. Some people do it sermon-based, and after a sermon on Sunday, they give people an outline, and this group gets together. We're just couples getting together to go over the sermon, to learn from that. It gets us together. While we're talking about the sermon, accidentally, our life tends to come out. See that? It's kind of sneaky, but it's there. We're there to talk about the sermon, but week by week, we get together, we have coffee, we talk about the sermon, but life tends to come out, tends to be helpful. Then there's book or study-based, where you get a Beth Moore book or a Lisa Frisbee book, and you go through that. Or Beth Olney, do you have books? Don't you really? Okay. Not yours personally? All right. All right. Okay. Here's a couple that I happen to personally know the author of, and she's quite bright. That Right from the Start book is really for dating and engaged couples. But we have had married couples in their first 5 years of marriage get that and start working on stuff they should have worked on before they got married. And it's been by the grace of God, and I mean that, by the grace of God, it's been good for them. Soulmate Marriage, we wrote for people that were in their 20s and newly married. It took about 18 months to write that book. We would get a little bit written, and we would send it to people who were in their 20s and newly married. And we would say, what's wrong with this? And they'd be all like, oh, you guys write the nicest books. We're like, no. You have to tell people what you're looking for. We would send it to them. We'd send them a chapter. We'd send them an excerpt. It's like, tell us what's wrong with this. They're, oh, you guys, we like how you write. No. When you do that, you learn from the people you're trying to write to. And eventually we got to where we broke down their barriers enough to where they tell us, whoever uses that word, who's ever heard that idea, what do you mean by this? This language is archaic. That doesn't connect with me. This doesn't reach me. That book got so much better once those people in their 20s and newly married started saying, okay, this doesn't work, this does. That's been like couple tested, couple approved. It's maybe useful because it went through the fire there. My favorite book in the world is that yellow one, Becoming Your Husband's Best Friend by Lisa. Best book ever written other than the Bible, end of story. Okay. This one, I forgot to talk about this one. This is not my book, so I can brag all I want to. If you are trying to run a marriage ministry, Group Publishing of Colorado got 24 people together over the course of 3 years and wrote down every possible good idea in marriage ministry you could ever come up with and put it all in one book. It's awesome. If you're trying to run a marriage ministry, you'd have 3 years, 5 years, 7 years of material right here. You wouldn't have to have a thought in your brain because it's on page 82. They got it done. It took them 3 years, all kinds of contributors, Les and Leslie Parrott, prominently featured on the cover if you know those names, all kinds of bright people. They got it done, and they wanted to charge $60 for it on the rationale that churches would buy it and put it in their library, and churches are rich. And some of us started talking to them and said, you know, churches are maybe not as rich as you think. And small churches that don't have like a budget for this maybe should pay less. And Group Publishing finally brought it down to $35. And I promise you, if you bought it for $35, you would not try to get your money back. There's billions and billions of ideas in here. Because we contributed a little bit, and I wouldn't want to overplay what we did, we can buy them a little cheaper. So if you buy them from us, you can pay $25. That's a ghastly amount of money. But if anything can be worth it, look at it, try it before you buy it. Look at it and see. There's a million good ideas in there. We have a few left you can have for $25 instead of $35. If anything can possibly be worth that much money, I think that one is. In small groups, think about mixing generations. Think about mixing cultures. Think about mixing it. He's going to try it before he buys it. Yes, God bless you, sir. He's going to try it. Big events, small groups, marriage mentors. Beth is going to talk in a minute about that. Let me just start that. In 1982, the Nazarene Church started sending us out to do that. The idea was not to find a perfect married couple and then replicate their perfection. The idea was not to find experts in marriage and then let them teach us with, you know, great conversation. What the idea was to find people that could be real, people that could tell the truth about what was going on in their relationship, people that were works in progress being shaped by God in useful directions, who would be willing to share that with other couples. That was the idea. It is life transforming when you get a couple that can do that. Not every couple is willing to let you in. And in a marriage mentor couple, at some of, too much information is too much information, okay? Let's just agree on that. But at some level, a mentor couple has to be willing to let you in and tell you not how it should be or how it ought to be or what the book says, but how it is in reality. Here's an example. Here's an example. I marry an absolutely perfect human being, okay? Absolutely perfect. The first 3 years of our marriage, we fought in grocery stores all the time. All the time. In grocery stores. We were great in church. We were great almost anywhere. In grocery stores, we fought all the time. Here's why. We would go to grocery stores, and my wife that I had just gotten married to kept sneaking stuff into the cart that was not groceries. All these crazy optional non-grocery items, paper towels, toilet paper, soap, all this stuff that was not groceries. And you get down to check out of this cart, half of the stuff in this cart isn't groceries, and it's $1 million. And as dumb as that sounds, we had conflict in the grocery store because she wanted us to have toilet paper in the bathroom, which really, when you think it through, is not a bad idea. And her husband went to the grocery store thinking, we're going to spend $30 on groceries. And what's that? That's not a grocery. That's not a grocery. That's not a grocery. We would fight in grocery stores. Don't blame her. It wasn't her. She was just trying to keep us well stocked with toilet paper. If you can't talk, here's another one, okay? In case that's not real enough for you. Do you have time for a little reality? Here's reality. My parents had a beautiful marriage, both godly people. They're both in heaven. I'm not half the man my father was. I admire my parents so much. Great church people, great Christians, great marriage. They never fought except for when they did. Okay? When they did was like, oh, I don't know, in the car on the way to church. Or 24 hours before any vacation we ever took. That's when they fought. Their fights were always the same. They'd get upset. And my father couldn't deal with unresolved conflict. It was hard for him to let conflict be unresolved. So he'd be badgering, trying to get it fixed right now. And my mother would clam up and shy away and want to get away from that and not want to deal with it now because she just wanted to withdraw. I'm the future Dr. Frisbee. I am so smart. I'm sitting there in the back of the car just thinking, Dad, you idiot. Shut up. Back off, calm down, mom's going to be fine, wait until she calms down, have the conversation then. But my dad couldn't learn that lesson. He had to solve it right now. I got married. Any idea where this is going? You want to give the rest of the presentation? I got married to this amazing person, a perfect human being, and I discovered about myself that I can't deal with unresolved conflict in a primary relationship. I'm very flexible about when we fix it, now or now. Choose. Right now or right now. I woke up about a year into my marriage, listening to what I just said, watching what I had just done, and realizing I had become my dad. I was every bit as stupid as my dad. And I love my dad. Did I say that up front? I do. In the same way, because I can't stand unresolved conflict, there I am battering on it, not physically, but trying to resolve something because I can't stand it being unresolved, when all she needs is a little time and space, and we're going to be fine. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about in a marriage mentor couple. If you can't talk about stuff that's going on, I'm not sure mentoring is the best thing for you. Beth, talk to us about mentoring.
Five to 7 years, and we train them in how to be mentors. We use a tool called Prepare and Enrich by Life Innovations. And that tool becomes the basis for the conversation that the mentor couple has with the mentee. And it's been very effective. We've trained over 80 mentor couples.
Excellent.
And they are doing great things in the community. We'll have people from the community call. They don't have a church home. And we're able to pair them up with a healthy mentor couple that goes to church. They invite them to church, and they become part of that community. And it's been very effective.
Wow. So if I'm the pastor of West Nowhere, Nebraska, how would I get a mentor couple, or why would that be of benefit to me?
Well, we tell pastors that the mentor couples can actually take the load off of you. There are some pastors who must do the premarital preparation, and I get that. But there are others that they don't feel confident in it.
Yes.
So the mentor couples can take the load off the pastor and actually run those preparation sessions
right.
for the pastor.
Right.
And it's a relief to many of the pastors.
It is. It is. And what she is too gracious to say and might not mean, so I shall not misquote her, I'll just offer this. For pastors, being transparent is not always the easiest thing. And being transparent about marriage is not always the easiest or the safest thing. Sometimes, even a pastor that wants to be authentic, it might not be in his or her best interest to be really transparent about what's going on. So it might be a gift to the pastor to let somebody else have that transparency slice of things. That might be okay. Anything else you want to say about mentoring? You must believe in it.
Definitely. And the research is bearing out that mentoring is more effective than actual counseling. Even though people pay for counseling sessions, for some reason they don't take their advice. But when they're communicating with a mentor couple who've gone through it, they've experienced it, like you're saying, I've been there, they tend to listen to that more.
Yeah.
And our
mentor
couples do it as a ministry, so it's all free.
And
only pay for the inventory from Life Innovation.
Which is the test. The test, they take.
They,
yes, they pay for that.
Yeah, that's it. $35.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful investment in a marriage.
And how that helps the couple doing the mentoring is there's some structure there. They don't have to make up something. There's a structure right there on the page.
All right there. You get a printout. You can see exactly the 10 minutes.
I am really pro-counseling. I'm also a counselor. But men come to counseling because their wives drag them to counseling. That's why they come. They come, they go all the way through it, all the way to the end, they keep coming, they go all the way through it, they graduate out the other side, so they can say, see, we tried that. That's why. They come, not to get things fixed, but so they can say at the end, see, we tried that. This works around that entire problem. This is a completely different approach. This is just talking about marriage and talking about what the test scores indicate. And, yeah.
It's very objective.
Yes. 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 Yes.
It's called marriageinc.org.
You have something in the exhibit hall, or is it torn down already? Yeah. She is married to Kent, and they do wonderful marriage things. I am happy to promote them anywhere I go. They do wonderful. Yeah. Right where this event is happening. Marriage mentors, people that are spiritually solid, authentic and open, good listeners. You could consider paying for their training. Do your mentors go through a training to use the... Yes.
6 hours.
Okay. Right.
And are able to then speak to it much better when they're with the couple.
Right. What does that training cost them?
We just ask for the churches to cover the price of their...
their testing?
Notebooks. Other than that, nothing.
Okay. So the church could cover, what, $80, $100?
$70.
$70?
And if the church can't afford it, then Marriage Inc. will come alongside and take care of it.
Did you hear what she just said? If there's a financial reservation in your mind over $70, that might be the smartest $70 you ever spent, they may have a way around that for you. God bless you. May your tribe increase. Here's a look at three niche markets very quickly you might consider. Remarried couples. 20 years ago, you couldn't get churches to deal with remarried couples. We had books, we had articles, we had stories. Churches didn't want to deal with this. We have a seminar called The Remarriage Journey. churches didn't want us to do it because they wanted us to reinforce original marriages. Publishers wanted us to write books to reinforce original marriages. Every time a publisher would say that, I would say, would you go to the bookstore with me? And here's like 80 books on marriage by people you've never heard of, and no books on remarriage or how to do a remarriage. God was calling us to do that, and the church did not get it at all. In fact, the church said, quit doing that. I've had pastors tell me, this is a quote from a pastor, never mind who, they're divorced, they're not supposed to be happy. They're remarried, they shouldn't be happy. Yes? Yes, yes.
I mean, you think about a young, I personally know a young couple where she's got two kids, she lost her husband, he's 32 years old, yeah. Tragic car accident.
Yes.
Where's her hope?
Right.
Where's her love?
Right.
And, you know, I heard somebody, you know, they said, well, God bless the man that may take that on. But really? That's what we're going to say to somebody? I don't think so. Yeah. Good for you.
The church has happily changed on that. Listen to me. I wish everybody stayed in their original marriage all their lives. Okay, are we clear on that?
Absolutely.
What's wrong with that? I wish they did. In the real world, a whole lot of people are starting over. The church is finally coming to realize a lot of people are starting over. Maybe we should come alongside them with some hope and some help. If your church and your community had something going for remarried couples, you'd be reaching people outside your church doors that are struggling with step family issues or blended family issues. There's a market there that the needs are not met. So your church could do that. You could be that church, that group. Recently married, another good one. Wow. The first 3 to 5 years of marriage are when marriages end. Right there. My expectations collide with reality. My experience like rears its ugly head. My experience I was trying to forget about and burying the past, all of a sudden, ooh, it's right here. I, frankly, personally, just talking about me, didn't know who I was until I got married. I was perfect until I got married. Then I discovered my real self. Oh my goodness, David, are you selfish? I didn't know that about you. Where'd that come from? I don't know, but it's there. If you're helping people in that first 3 to 5 years of marriage, what a wonderful thing to do. What a great focus to have. Give that some thought. I know of a couple of churches, larger churches, that have hired pastors to young married couples. Brilliant. That may be something your church can't do, but to have a pastor for young married couples, by the way, how's that working out for them? Their number of young married couples attending the church is going through the roof because they've got somebody right there working with them that knows what they're dealing with, what they're going through. And that means the Sunday school and the children's ministry is going through the roof because here come the young married people. It's a great niche to consider. Dating and engaged.
Does he show them how to go shopping?
That's right. Yeah, well, see, now you can just go to Walmart Supercenter, right? So we know going in the door we're going to buy everything they have to sell. And it's so much simpler now. Yeah. So helping dating and engaged is also a great thing to do. Oh, women's ministries. Quick comment here. I am not telling you the world as it should be. I'm telling you the world as it is. If you want to talk just about marriages that I've watched be radically transformed, I mean unbelievable before and after stories. Those marriages, those transformations start when the woman gives herself unreservedly to God and is amazingly changed, and usually she wasn't the problem. I'm going to say that again. If this was a seminar about radical transformation in marriage, radical, night and day, radical transformation in marriage. We've watched God do that. How it usually happens is that the woman gets serious about being sold out to God, and she's not the one that's the problem. By the way, I don't take sides. I don't point fingers. I'm not trying to be a referee. But if you looked at it objectively, you wouldn't blame her for whatever the problem is. She, however, is the one that's more sensitive, more open, more aware. She gets in God's presence and just falls on her face and says, God, whatever you need to do with me, you just do. She is transformed, and the husband, almost against his will, is blown away by the transformation in her. If you did nothing else in a marriage ministry, if you worked with women and taught them to love the idiot they married, or the doofus they married, or put your word in there. God has done some amazing, powerful transformations in that specific individual way that just are mind-blowing. Let's change the world one married couple at a time. There's a lot of ways to do that. Big events, small groups, marriage mentoring. Do you have ideas that you've seen work that didn't come up in those categories? It wasn't mentoring, it wasn't small groups, it wasn't a big event, it was... That's where the action is in things that are working, that I've seen. Big events, small groups, mentors. And the niche markets that I would recommend are remarried, newly married, working with women, dating and engaged. Those are niches to consider. Comments, questions?
Yeah.
Yes?
My wife and I are in the States. We've got 4 small kids at home, so there is no such thing as romance in our home. And we're deeply committed to each other.
Yes. Yes.
The life is tough. Life is very difficult. And some of the best things that anyone has done for us is to say, let me take your kid.
Yes.
There is nothing more more meaningful to me, not just as a pastor, but just as a dad and as a husband.
Yes.
And that's for both of us, too. There's nothing more meaningful than for someone to say, I'm watching your kids tonight. Here's $20. You know, go to Starbucks. You know, even something as simple as that. And,
yeah.
And so, you know, just for me and my wife to be able to sit down across from one another over coffee.
Yes.
For, you know, a kid-free half an hour.
Yes.
That does enough to recharge our battery.
Yes. Can you hear him saying that? Young parent, did you say 4?
4, yes.
Parent of 4, when someone takes those kids for a while and lets he and his wife have some time, that's transformational. That's
volunteers.
And because he said $20, one quick story, and I know when somebody says quick story, they usually don't mean it, but I mean it. We're working at a marriage retreat in Eastern Europe with people whose language we don't speak, Bulgarian, Romania, Kosovo, Turkey. A couple comes in for counseling there in pastoral ministry there in Romania. I don't speak Romanian. They don't speak English. We can't talk to each other. How can you have authentic marriage counseling when you can't even speak each other's language? They're going to have to bring in a translator. I'm so smart, I know that we can't ever actually get into anything if I have to tell my worst problem to a translator to tell it to somebody else. That's not going to happen. They come into our session in a hotel in Bulgaria. They come into our session. Husband and wife, married 38, 39 years, they're in their 60s. I have never seen two people more rigidly closed off from each other with all their body language just saying, I don't want to touch that person, I don't want to be near that person. Just closed off. They won't look at each other, they won't make eye contact. They are so, both of them, just so tightly wound and so angry. We go through an hour of back and forth with a translator and talking and getting acquainted. He's a pastor. They're in ministry. They can't even talk to each other. It's tight. It's tight. I'm doing what I always do when I don't know what to do, which is pray. And that means I have a really good prayer life because there's a lot of times I don't know what to do. I'm praying because I don't know how in the world some guy from America is supposed to be helpful for people in Romania whose language I can't even speak and I don't even know yet what the problem is. You, sir, you caused this because you said $20. You caused this. God says, hand them $20 and send them out on a date. I'm in Balchik, Bulgaria. God says, hand them $20 and send them out on a date. Okay. Through the translator, I explained to them that I'd like to see them tomorrow for another session. It's an honor to meet them. We need to work on some issues. By the way, I think God wants me to give you $20 and send you out on a date. Here's the rules. Go out to dinner, just a date. Don't work on your problems. Don't talk about your issues. Just have dinner. Just eat. In Balchik, Bulgaria, for $20, you can go out to any dinner you want for 2, have dessert, order a beverage. Go nuts. Order a beverage. Walk home and have a coffee on the way home, and you got like $2 when you get back home. They walk in the next day to the same room where we're counseling in this hotel in Balchik, Bulgaria, at this retreat for missionaries and pastors. They walk into that same room as 2 of the most different people I've ever seen in my life. I have never seen overnight transformation. And you need to know this story because no actual counseling was involved. They are so different. They are so transformed. They start to talk to me and they're crying. They're weeping. She starts telling the story. He starts telling the story. Here's the story. She says to me, "We have never been to a restaurant, just us two, in our entire lives. We've been married 38 or 39 years. We have never been to a restaurant, just us two, in our entire lives." She says, "Before in the communists," this is Romania, "before in the communists, this was not possible. After the communists," she says, "this was possible. We had no money. We have never been out to dinner, just us two, in our entire lives." She went on to tell me that after they came back from dinner, they went back to their hotel room, and they both looked happy the next day. And they had not been happy for a very, 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 very long time. All of that from this gentleman saying, "Take my kids and give me $20, please." All right. God bless you. We're